You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We're rapidly running out of shows now. We're down to the business end of the season. This is Series 5, Episode 33, coming your way tonight. It's Kieran Burke and John Breyer on duty. No Gary Riley. We'll find out where he is shortly, but we've got plenty to get through, as ever, on tonight's show. We're going to open up the show with an interview with local reporter from Dundalk, James Rogers. He's going to tell us all about the recent takeover at the Oriel Park Club by the local consortium. So we'll hear from James about that and the latest developments from the Lilywhites. We're going to look back at this weekend's games from the Premier Division. We'll look ahead to the final round of fixtures this weekend with that relegation playoff spot still up for grabs, or still to be avoided, if you want to put it that way. Waterford and Harps neck for neck going into the final weekend, while fourth spot is still up for grabs as well, and that'll be battled out between Bowes and Derry City. So we'll chat about those games, we'll preview them, we'll get stuck into our predictions as ever. And we're going to round off the show this week with an interview with Aaron Clark from the WNL show, the Women's National League show, ahead of the FEI Women's Cup final this weekend between Shelburne, who are chasing the double, and Wexford. And we'll chat about other issues surrounding women's football in Ireland as well. And we've got some other little bits and pieces to come throughout the night as well. But John, good to have you along tonight.
Yeah, it's good to be on, Kieran. How's things?
Not too bad. It's nice of you to turn up and like the other fella.
I know. And you've told me where he is tonight, and all I can say is he needs docking points.
Yeah, should we tell the listeners where he is?
Go on. I'm disgusted.
He's at another podcast.
It's just that I didn't even know there was other ones, Kieran.
He's done a Fenn. He's done a Neil Fenn.
Yeah. Can't be anything worse than that.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. If I finish bottom, I definitely think a points deduction. We'll have to have a bit of committee meeting and we'll talk about a major points deduction.
Absolutely. A serious points deduction. Minus 12, I think, for...
Yeah, sounds about right.
Something like that. Yeah, disgraceful. But look, as long as he's advertising plenty about Between the Stripes, you know, that's...
Yeah, well, I should have given him my BTS gear to wear up, but I don't think he even owns one of them. He's really letting the team down.
That's really bad, isn't it? It's really bad. He'll probably go in his Wexford outfit or something. Or is that sure. Fitzy or you?
That's all of us. We all love the Wexford. Anyway, right, let's get on with the show here. We will get stuck into the results from the weekend in a moment. But first of all, John, just your reaction to the takeover at Dundalk.
Can only be good news, really, can't it? I mean, the fans were desperate to see the back of the Yanks and Peak Six, and they've got the wishes. So it'll be interesting to see what the new owners have in store for Dundalk. Have they set out a plan yet, Kieran, or anything? Have you heard anything up that way?
No, they haven't. I think from speaking to James, maybe there might be a press conference planned down the line where we might get some more information. But even as you'll hear now in this interview with James, I suppose there's still some question marks, maybe. Not question marks, but what way it'll actually be run, because obviously we know it's Andy Connolly that's gone back in there. Martin Connolly will probably play a role as well. But in terms of Stats Sports, it'd be interesting to see how involved they're going to be and what exactly they're going to bring to the table. So, look, before we go any further, we might as well hear from the man himself, the man that knows all about Dundalk FC, and that's James Rogers, who joins us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, the big news in the League of Ireland last week was the successful takeover of Dundalk FC by a locally based consortium. I think that's exactly what the fans wanted to see, and they got their wish in the end. And to speak to us now about the takeover is James Rogers from the Argos and other outlets in Dundalk as well. James, good to see you. I suppose I wanted to open up and ask you about the reaction around the town, but I kind of know that anyway, but let's pretend I don't. Tell us, what's the positivity levels like around Dundalk town following the takeover last week?
Yeah, look, it's as popular, I think, as you could guess. I think this is something everyone wanted to happen. It finally did. And, you know, it's funny, like Friday night, it's probably the first time in many years Dundalk went into the final game with probably nothing to play for. But yet, we're still expecting a sort of party atmosphere as a result of the good news. I think everyone's delighted. You know, it hasn't been... It's a funny one because, like, if you look at the Peak Six era, you know, there has been success stories on the field in particular. But at the same time, particularly in the last sort of 18 months to 2 years, it's been gradually downhill. And I think, you know, you know, when you look back on this year, back to April, you've had protests throughout the year and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, when there was an opportunity for the club to move to new ownership, I think everyone wanted local owners. They've now got that. So, you know, everyone feels like they've got their wish. You know, Christmas has come early in the dog to a certain extent. And look, let's not put a fork in it either. There's a lot of work ahead and a lot of challenges ahead. But I think it's probably as good an end to the season, I think, that Dundalk could have hoped for, really.
And a lot of movement already. We've seen the former secretary return to the club. We've seen Jim McGilton depart the club. But have we any news on field and particularly management situation? Vinnie Peart, his contract comes to an end after this game against Derry. Likewise, a lot of the players. When can we expect to see some news in regards to contracts of playing and non-playing staff?
I think at this stage it'll be after Friday. Obviously, they've the Derry game on Friday. They haven't, you know, there's been small moves made in relation to talking to players and more setting up talks at this stage than anything. I think they're still trying to work out their budgets and stuff for next year, and that obviously is a factor in terms of, you know, what you can offer people. You know, I do expect a lot of changes, as you say there. Colin Murphy's come back in. There's been one or two other former staff back around the place. Probably only a matter of time until Martin Connolly's probably officially announced in some sort of role. I think that's to be expected. And yeah, I think the big thing then probably is get a manager on board. I don't think myself, and it's only an opinion, I don't think it'll be Vinnie Peart, based on what I'm hearing. So they look like they're going a completely new direction, which some people will be for, some people will be against. But look, they have a challenge. I think the biggest problem they're going to have maybe is resetting expectations. Like for the last few, guts of a decade really in Dundalk, you've been expected to challenge, you've been expected to win something every year. And that might not necessarily be the case next year, because look, I'm not saying they're exclusively linked, but budgets do have an impact usually on where you go. I think there will be a reduced budget. You know, we're still waiting to hear exactly what their plans are, even in terms of will it be part-time, full-time, that sort of thing. But I think people will have to just sort of, you know, maybe expect a year of sort of stabilization, because the Dock are already behind a lot of clubs in terms of their planning for next year. So there is that sort of thing ahead. But I think there's a real appetite now, probably more so than ever, for the fans to really get behind this regime. And I think you know, we finally have a supporters club established in Dundalk. There's been muted talk of maybe a membership for fans, and look, maybe the off season's when all that comes to light. But I think if they could support that in any way, I think it would be huge. And you know, a lot of people have been disillusioned with it in recent years too, including sponsors. And we've seen the likes of Jer Cunningham of Fife's tweeting there during the week to say he was looking forward to returning to Oriel. And you know, if you could get people like that back on board, it's huge, because they were more than you know yourself, you're up here a long time, they were probably more than a sponsor in terms of what they give back in terms of promotion for the club and you know, helping out with the underage stuff and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, they did a lot of community events as well, didn't they? And promoting, I suppose, healthy living for kids and the likes like that. So do you think we'll see a back to basics job at Dundalk? I know you're mentioning there that the playing budget will be trimmed probably quite significantly, but I think a lot of people would agree that's probably not a bad thing. I think the budget was probably far too big and maybe created problems at Dundalk this year. But in terms of off the field, you mentioned it there, we've seen Colin Murphy go back, we might see Martin Connolly go back, others might go back into roles that they used to fill, and volunteers that maybe drifted away and felt disillusioned, we might see them return to the club. So is it going to be about rebuilding those really strong links that the former owners have with the community?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that people have been crying out for. Like, you know, no matter what you accuse Pig Six of, they didn't not spend, you know, okay, they didn't spend wisely, but they weren't afraid to throw money at it. But they never really got the community. They never really got, like, you know, I was just even reflecting on their time in Dundalk recently, and you know, particularly early on, probably one of the most popular things they done was the tour jersey in aid of Temple Street. Now, I'm not here to knock Temple Street. It's a wonderful cause. I hope anyone with kids never needs to visit it, but if they do, it's a fantastic facility. But even that was a sort of misguided attempt for me to get into the community, because it's in Dublin, you know, and okay, it's a national service, but I mean, there's plenty of charities, organizations around Dundalk that you could have supported and, you know, help people, you know, that are walking down Park Street and Clonbrassa Street on a daily basis who will use them. So I think even at that level, you know, because you know yourself, like even locally in Ireland, if you're 20 minutes down the road, it seems like an absolute utter parish away or something. But, you know, in America, 3 hours is nothing, you know. So I think they just never got those little things. And I think, you know, restoring that community link now is vital. I think the volunteers coming back in will really, really help. As I say, the fans definitely want to get behind it, and I'm sure they would help out in any way. And yeah, I think that's something that people want to see more than anything. Like, listen, money, trophies, all that, they're great. European adventures, they're great. But I mean, a club should be, and the GAA do it particularly well, we have to give it to them, it should be more than about what happens on a Friday night, you know, Oriel Park and not just the Dock, but every other club needs to be something more than a place some people go on average, what, two Fridays in a month. It needs to be, there needs to be more to it. And Dundalk is a club with that potential. And then hopefully now they'll realise that and put all that into force, because look, they will rely on volunteers, but I don't think there's any shortage of people willing to lend a hand if they seek it out.
As you said, Friday should be a great occasion. I think there's going to be a massive crowd there and everyone's going to have a bit of a buzz after the news of this takeover. But it'll also be a farewell party of sorts as well for Michael Duffy and Patrick McElhinney. But is it fairly likely that they're not going to be the only two saying goodbye Friday night?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's already, I don't want to speak about individual players, but there's already rumours linking others who are going to move away, and you can't blame them because, I mean, as things stand, bar Andy Boyle of the senior players, you know, everyone else is out of contract come Saturday morning. So you can't blame people for looking after their futures. And look, it won't be a popular thing for fans to say, but if you do cut back on budgets, and look, we all have jobs, if our employer said in the morning that, look, you've gone from, and I'm using hypothetical figures here, if you're on 1500 a week and all of a sudden you're asked to work for 700 a week, you know, that's difficult. And I'm only speculating on that, but I mean, like, there will have to be cuts, and you will struggle to hang on to certain people, I think, in that scenario, which is only natural because, look, it's a short-term career. We've seen with other clubs around the league already that, you know, there's no real loyalty in football, and players have to look after themselves, which is fair enough. Maybe they need to get a bit creative about it, and maybe the security of things like a 3-year deal, which we've seen other clubs do, could be the difference maker for players, because I think that could be huge in terms of, you know, not just the player giving them, you know, security going forward, but also for the club, that when they get to the stage next year, they're a bit further down the road than having to negotiate everyone's contract again. So that might be key in terms of holding on to some of your core. And then if you can add to it, great. But yeah, they've a big few weeks ahead, but I think what fans would love to see now is a statement sort of signing or re-signing, you know, come out and say, be it a Patrick Hoban or Sean Murray or whatever, is committed for the next year, 2 years, whatever. And I think that would give everyone another lift. A lift again, but as I say, everyone's pretty much on a high at the moment. As I say, regarding Friday night, we don't exactly know whose last hurrah it is, bar Duffy and McElhinney. But you know, interesting few weeks ahead.
Do you think they'll feature in the game, given what's on the line? I know some people have been discussing this. Derry obviously are trying to tie down that fourth spot and a potential place in Europe, and Duffy and McElhinney are going there next season. I suppose it gives us flashbacks to the famous Seanie Maguire Cup final Carl Shepherd, I should say, in the Cup final all them years ago when he did start the Cup final, despite a linked move to Dundalk, which never materialised in the end. But do you think we'll see those lads feature on Friday night?
Well, McElhinney, I think, is definitely out because he's been, you know, actually, ironically, got injured against Derry back in August and hasn't played since. So I think he's definitely out. Duffy, I'd say, would, you know, bear in mind Sloggett and Patching are suspended as well. They probably do need him. I know it's different position, but I don't think Vinnie Peart for a second would doubt his professionalism. It is a funny one, though, and it's probably lucky that the Dock are in the mix for that fourth place as well, because it would be a real conundrum then, because, you know, I know you referenced the Carl Shepherd one, but at least had Carl Shepherd moved to Dundalk after that, it wasn't going to potentially cost his new club a European spot. And he, you know, you have to be selfish and go for the medal yourself. And at least you'd have been arriving in the new dressing room with a bit of bragging rights or whatever. But I'd say he will play, and I hope he gets a great reception from both fans. I was writing about the two guys this week, and, you know, Duffy, just to mention him, like, I mean, I made it 54 goals and 96 assists in 196 starts. You know, it's 150 goal involvements. It's, you know, when you see it on paper and going back through it, because I was cross-referencing with other people on the figure and looking back on things just to make sure he did or didn't get an assist in certain games and that. And it's just phenomenal. Like, I think, you know, when you see it like that, it's amazing he didn't end up cross channel. I know he was at Celtic prior to coming to Dundalk, but I'm surprised no one took a chance on him given his form at Dundalk in recent years. But look, they've been wonderful servants, and I hope to get a good send off.
There should be a bit of spice and a little bit of bite in this one, because I think it's fair to say, I don't think many would disagree, that there's no love lost between Vinnie Perth and Rory Higgins. We've seen some exchanges between them in the media this year, and we're only speculating, but this could be Vinnie Perth's last game. So he's not going to want to go out with a defeat. And Rory Higgins obviously would be very, very keen to get that fourth spot and maybe rub Vinnie Perth's nose in some of those comments that he made earlier in the year. So there should be a little bit of spice to this end of season game.
Yeah, I think the manner in which they announced the re-signings of McElhenney and Duffy didn't sit well with many in Dundalk. I'm sure you've heard that yourself from the Dundalk fans. So I think if we could spoil their party a little bit, it'd be really appreciated. And yeah, look, maybe there's a bit of spite there over, like, Dundalk have taken a number of players from Derry and over the years, obviously McElhenney being one, and, you know, even going back to the likes of, you know, Greg Slogger was another, and there, you know, there's been numerous probably signed from there, Dean Jarvis and stuff. But for that reason, I think, did Derry have to announce it when they did and how they did? Probably not. There was probably a bit of spite in that. Like, I mean, it'd be well known on the League of Ireland grapevine that the other players signed at this stage that, you know, aren't necessarily Dundalk players. And why aren't they announced? You know, I mean, you would have to ask that. But, like, look, that's what football's all about too. It's rivalries and stuff. I think ultimately, a lot of time for Derry and myself as a club, I mean, you know yourself from going to games and stuff, someone like Lawrence Moore, I don't think there's no one looks after you better. And obviously Rory Higgins is a bit of a legend at Dundalk as well.
Yeah, very much so. No, look, it should be a very interesting game on Friday night. We were mentioning the club as a whole, probably going back to the community. Do you think we'll see a big shift in transfer policy as well? Because no matter what happens, there's obviously going to be a major rebuild here, whether it's signing players back up or signing a whole new squad. And obviously we've seen Dundalk go a little bit international under Peak Six, but do you think it'll be back to the tried and tested League of Ireland circle now over the next while, no matter who's in charge?
I think so, just for the simple reason of finances. Now, there may end up being links, you know, because of the Stat Sports element of the consortium that's taken over, and I'm really intrigued to see what they might bring to the party. There has been talk of links with maybe Premier League clubs and getting a few in on loan. And I mean, we've seen with the likes of, say, Yaros at Pats this year, how that can be really fruitful. But I don't think you can flood your team with that either. I mean, it's grand if it's one or two. But I think, first and foremost, I think you need to get your manager in place, because whoever that is will dictate maybe who players want to sign for. It will also dictate, you know, things like formation, style, all that. And I think that's where you need to start it, because, you know, if you go off, just start signing players without a manager in place, do you become, you know, Bill Hull-sized with an Irish passport or something, you know? So I think get that's what I'd like to see now. Get that sort of manager in place, give everyone a sort of someone to get behind. And yeah, but to go back to your question, I do see the League of Ireland sort of being that sort of, you know, market that they go for. Like in recent seasons, I would have said, like, someone like a Matty Smith would have been ideal for Dundalk, you know, and that wasn't taken in on board up there, obviously, and not that everything I say should be, but he's the type of player.
Even looking at goalkeepers, obviously, I know you've spoke about it on the press box with Craig, but James Talbot is a name that very easily could have ended up at Dundalk, but it didn't happen for whatever reason.
Yeah, they could have had him, they could have had others, but, like, I think at times, look, there was probably an almost a disrespect for the league at times with various parties over the ability. And, you know, it's a hard league to settle in for anyone. If you look at the, I mean, you had Joey and Doe on recently, but like bar the likes of maybe him and Gary Twigg and stuff, there've been very few foreigners have come in here and really hit the ground running. Some who have took a while to get up and running. You don't normally have that in the League of Ireland. And it's hard to settle in a new country at the best of times. But during a pandemic, it's that little bit tougher. And even again, from a budgetary point of view, you know, the amount of money Dundalk would have spent on, say, rent this year was, you know, crazy, more than, say, the likes of Longford would have spent in their playing squad.
Yeah.
So you're eliminating that when you sign Irish players too. So I'd say that will form the basis of it.
We've mentioned Martin and Andy and their involvement quite a bit. We haven't really touched on Stat Sport. I know you've mentioned their connection with some English clubs, and obviously we know that the products that they have as well, their great background and stats and all the rest. But what else will they actually bring to the table, and how big will their involvement be in the day-to-day running, and what will the actual setup of the club be? Who's going to be running it day-to-day, or is that still remains to be unseen?
Yeah, it's a bit like until they actually sit down and make their plan sort of more known. I think it's a bit unknown. We're expecting Martin Connolly to go back in there in a senior role in terms of off the field. And I am intrigued to see what Stat Sports could bring. Obviously, look, they've a wealth of knowledge on players and analytics and that, which may help identify targets. I think that could be a big thing. But, you know, I think one, you know, their link-ups with different clubs across channel and around the world, for that matter, you know, could see potential loan signings come in. You know, it's only rumours at this stage, but they're rumoured to want maybe a return to a grass surface long term. I think that's too short of an off season to turn that around by the start of next year, but maybe 2023 or something, you could see that.
The current Astro pitch is near and its end, though, lifespan wise. And I think it's about 7 years that usually the lifespan of those is. Did that go in around 2015 or so?
I think there was one put in at the start of 17 and it passed its test with flying colours there this year. So in theory, it could have hosted the Europa League final or something. But
So they've got a bit of time to play with there.
They do, but it's one of them. It's a bit like the stadium as well. It's one of those sort of dark clouds circling in the background that can't be ignored either, because one way or another in the next few years, you need to make a decision on it, and it's going to probably be a costly one as well. I think the Stat Sports are probably looking at this with more of a long-term view. I think they're, you know, there's no secret. I think they plan to float the company publicly in years to come, and that's probably when they'll really cash in terms of that, and maybe then they'll have more money to invest in the club if they see fit. But certainly, I think if they can help out in any way, like I think, look, I've seen on their social media channels today, they've billboards in Times Square and stuff, so it shows the enormity of the company, and having someone like that on board with what the likes of Alan and Sean have achieved in recent years, I think it can only be a good thing.
Yeah. Look, James, we've had you on quite a bit this year, and a lot of the time it's been negativity and scandal. So it's nice to have a positive chat for once. It's great to see some positivity around the town leading into Christmas. And it's going to be an exciting off-season now to see who's going to be the manager, what the setup of the club will be, what players come in and all the rest. So exciting times and happier times for Dundalk fans ahead, hopefully. But thanks for all the chats this year. And just tell our listeners where they can find yourself and Craig on the press box.
Yeah, I think it's pressbox.ie. I'm not even sure. That's more Craig's baby. But look, it's been a difficult year for everyone, I think. And look, you've Dundalk fans in your own sort of extended family as well. And look, I think it went through the seven stages of grief this year at times. But look, we're probably the other side of it now. There's a new challenge ahead. But I think it's an exciting challenge because the fans will feel part of it again. I think even the basic communication so far have been an improvement. And look, hopefully it's might have to take one step back before sort of climbing the mountain again, but hopefully they can.
Brilliant stuff. James, thanks very much, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers, Kieran.
For our latest podcasts, video content and exclusive columns from Stephen Henderson, Connor Hoey and James Rogers, visit BetweenTheStripes.net.
Yeah, and as I was saying there with James, just from walking around the town of Dundalk over the last couple of days, you can feel it in the air. The buzz is back, and I think Friday will be a great occasion up in Oriel Park. But let's get stuck into the games from the weekend, John, and we'll start with the game that we were both at. I was on commentary duty as ever, and you were in section O shouting and roaring like a madman as Longford drew 1-1 with Waterford. But look, it was a fairly poor, low-quality game of football for much of it, but then it was lit up by a brilliant goal by Anthony Wordsworth. But was it a lack of discipline then that the cost Waterford on the night? They give away a penalty, Greg Halford gets himself needlessly sent off, and they were lucky maybe to leave with a point in the end.
Yeah, well, they were, I thought. It was questionable, the penalty. I mean, you have obviously seen the replays of it, Kieran. What did you make it? Definite penalty? Or
definite penalty. I haven't probably looked back at it since that night, to be honest, but I'd like to go back and see Darren Nugent win in possession. I thought he might, and I did say it on commentary in live time, that I thought he might have maybe pulled the jersey of the Waterford player that he dispossessed. But the referee waved play on, and it was a great run then from Nugent. Take absolutely nothing away from him. Great run. Good ball into the feet of Williams. Williams with some good quick feet. And I think it was Eddie Nolan that took him down, if I recall it correctly. And Nolan and Halford, I thought, had been really solid. And they'd offered a really good threat in the first half in the other box, going up from set pieces and the like. So I was surprised to see them give away such a sloppy penalty, and Dean Williams tucks it away really well, and we know a celebration then and everything that followed. But I think it was Mark Burcham. We were talking about Burcham's comments after the Shamrock Rovers game and the fact he was looking for a reaction from his Waterford players. He didn't really get it, John, and I'd say he was pulling his hair out in that dressing room after the game, because for someone so experienced like Halford to go and get himself so needlessly sent off, I mean, for anyone that didn't see it, Dean Williams scores the penalty, takes his shirt off, and he celebrates in front of the Waterford fans. That draws a bit of a reaction from their fans and from some of the players on the pitch, and Halford ends up getting booked in what followed. And then towards the end of the game, Durvan goes down with a bit of a knock, and he's on the ground for a few moments, and Greg Halford comes over and tries to pick him up off the ground, and that sparks another bit of a melee, and Halford gets another yellow and gets himself sent off, and they totally lost their shape then, and they could have lost the game. So if I was Mark Burcham, I'd be absolutely disgusted with Greg Halford and his lack of discipline.
Well, I don't think the ref realised he'd actually yellow carded him in the first place, did he? Took him a while to get the red out for Greg Halford, so I thought I'd had a pretty good game until then.
You thought the ref had a decent game, or Greg Halford?
No, Greg Halford.
Yeah, I was going to say we may stop this podcast now. Referee Ray Matthews. Horrendous performance. I mean, there wasn't a bad tackle in the game up until the couple of yellow cards came into it, which was more for a dissent and silly stuff. But there wasn't really a bad tackle in the game, bar one. I think Shane Elworthy nearly knocked Junior into next week at one stage. But aside from that, it was a fairly good-spirited game, but He just didn't have a grasp on it, couldn't control the game. And this crack that we've been talking about all year as well, where a referee makes a decision instead of just saying, right, let's get on with it, lads, he has to have a big lecture with the players, and then everyone gets frustrated on and off the pitch, and things boil over. So I thought his general handling of the game was very, very poor. But look, what's new?
Couple of points from me. Great goal from Anthony Wordsworth. Great strike.
Yeah.
He's been a good signing there for Waterford. And I thought there could have been a second red card, because Dean Williams, now he's only just inside the Waterford half, but he's pulled down, his shirt's clearly pulled inside their half. He's clean through on goals as far as I could see. The ref didn't even give a free kick, to the absolute amazement of anybody that was watching.
Yeah, can see where you're coming from 100%. I was absolutely stunned he didn't give a free kick. But for me, it wouldn't have been a red card, John, because that ball was a long way in front of Williams. He had a lot of work to get onto it. The goalkeeper, I think, had begun coming off the line as well. I think the goalie probably would have got there first. So for me, he's not denied a clear goal scoring opportunity there. It's on the halfway line as well, you have to remember. So even if Williams latches onto that ball, there's a lot of work to do. But it was certainly a foul, certainly a yellow card. But again, it was just one of the little factors that built up during the game that the referee just didn't have a grasp of.
No, he was very poor on the night. How many times have we gone on about referees? We are the broken record, Kieran, when it comes to these.
Look, on Waterford, as we said, they'll be greatly frustrated here. I mean, they take the lead with a stunning goal from Wordsworth, and you think then they're going to push on, but we mentioned Halford getting himself sent off, and Longford had a chance late on in the game, John, to break and go for a winner in what was their final home game of the season. They're already relegated. They have nothing to lose. And they go and put the ball in the corner.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's just beyond beyond imagination.
I could hear you. I was commentating and I had the headsets on, but I could hear you. I could hear what you shouted. You were not a happy camper.
I dread to think what I shouted, because if you were commentating, I was probably swearing at that stage and, yeah, just appalled. I mean, it was just so negative, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think... Thank goodness this season's nearly an end from a Longford point of view. But really, Waterford had to get 3 points in that match. I think it's going to the last match of the season, but that was a big blow for them when you consider that Harps got something at Pats, which I don't think any of us predicted. So that was a big blow for them, and now they've a tough enough match last game of the season.
Yeah, we'll move on and discuss that Harps game. Pats 2, Finn Harps 2, and all the goals came in a very quick period in this one. Billy King opened the score and Sean Boyd equalised a minute later. Boyd got a couple of goals on the night. The talented youngster Dara Burns also on the score sheet. But not for the first time this season. Kosovar Siddiqui seeing red. We've mentioned Waterford and their lack of discipline there. I think we've touched on Harps a few times this season as well. I think Ollie got his obligatory yellow card on the night as well. So a dramatic night up in Richmond Park, but... given Waterford slip up Harps, they go into that final game of the season now ahead of Waterford on goal difference. I think they've got a 7-goal swing on the Blues. So advantage Harps, you'd have to say, at this moment in time.
Big advantage, yeah. Now, I know both teams home game left, but, you know, with that goal difference advantage and a home fixture against the bottom club, you would definitely say advantage Harps. Incidentally, there's a great photo of Ollie getting that book in.
Yeah, I've seen it. Fantastic.
Lex look on his face, and it's just like, who, me? No, surely not ref. But yeah, that's a great result for them, because I think, like I said, we all had Pats down for a home win, and they've got some players in good form, not least Billy King, who opened the scoring on the night. But Sean Boyd's been a good signing for Harps, hasn't he? He got both goals, and I know he had a spell at Longford, didn't he? Which we failed to get impressed by, but he's been doing a great job for Harps recently. And
I wrote about him earlier on in the year. It's fantastic to see him back, because I think his career was in doubt at one stage through a very, very serious injury. And he's done really well to get himself back. And anytime I've seen him this year, I've been greatly impressed by him. And you only have to think back to them cup games against Dundalk as well, and some of the absolute belters he scored, and late goals and composure in front of goals. I think it's been a really, really big year for him, a big breakthrough year for Sean Boyd.
Yeah, big year for him, and he has impressed on the late side of the season. So, he's going to be crucial in that final game, isn't he, at home to Longford.
What about Pats? Are you worried at all about their lack of momentum going into this cup final, or do you think Stephen O'Donnell's doing the right thing? He's making 5 or 6 changes every game. He's rotating, he's keeping players fresh, and I'm sure he knows his best 11 for the cup final already. And when cup final day comes around, I'm sure it'll be all systems go. But is there any doubt, any bit of concern in the back of your mind at all?
Not for me, Kieran. I think he's probably doing the right thing, because he's giving players chances. He's keeping things fresh. And let's face it, Pats have nothing to be playing for in the league at this stage of the season. So to me, he's done the right thing. He's played a few, he's shaken it up, played a few prospects. And, you know, he'll have his team in mind for the final. Don't be worried about that, and he'll be all ready to go. So I don't see a major issue there.
And I suppose you're right there. O'Donnell probably hasn't had any great choice about how to approach this. I think this is the only way he can approach it, because, as you said, they've got nothing to play for. Second place is secured. They can't obviously win the league. So there's not going to be that bite to their games, whereas Bowes, they're playing for that fourth spot. So they're in that mode of knowing every point is important, whereas Pats, they're just in, even if they're not intending at times, I'm sure they're probably just maybe that 1 or 2% not at it like they would be if there was a big 3 points on the line for, you know, securing Europe or securing a title or whatever it may be. So O'Donnell can really only rest his players and keep them ticking over, whereas Bowes have had to play every game at full tempo.
Yeah, I think they'll be really fresh for the cup final, and that would maybe edge it in my book. And I think he knows this, O'Donnell, and it'd be great. He knows that how important this is, and getting a trophy, you know, is this his second season in management, Kieran?
Second full season.
Yeah,
anyway.
So it would be a fantastic coup for him to get that, to finish second in the league and win the FAI Cup. Would be a fantastic season, really, for him.
Yeah, we've been discussing that fourth spot scenario, and Derry City is the club that are chasing with Bohemians for that fourth spot. And they had a cracking 2-0 win against Sligo, John. And a player I think everyone knows that I'm a big admirer of since he came into the league, Jamie McGonigal. We had him on the show here not long after he signed, and he got two absolute crackers in this game.
Yeah, no, I haven't got a chance to see the goals in this one, but he's been a fabulous signing, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's just real classy finisher. I mean, the two goals he scored, you could say he waxed them, but at the same time, there's a bit of finesse about them as well. He's just a really classy operator for me.
He's been a huge goal scorer in the past. I think we touched on this before, didn't he? He was with Cole Rain, I think it was, and he was scoring a goal every two games. He's always scored goals. I think he had a spell with Crusaders as well, I think. But he, you know, he's always scored goals, no matter, you know, when he's been in the Cole Rain starting lineup. And you know, for Derry to get a player of that caliber and that goal scoring record was exactly what they wanted. And he's proven his worth, isn't he? And you know, I think Derry paid a fee, didn't they, for him?
They did,
if
yeah.
If I remember right, yeah.
Fairly sizable fee for him.
And he's well paid that back from everything that he's done so far. So
that's why I find the chat about Georgie Kelly so interesting at the moment, because he's linked with a move to Derry, as we all know. But I think you've got an out-and-out goal scorer there in Jamie McGonigal. And I would have viewed him as being the man that would play through the middle of a front three. But obviously, Rory Higgins maybe has something else in mind. And I've spoken to people that have followed McGonigal's career a lot longer than I have and have watched him in the north and all the rest. And they feel that he can play out on the left of a front three and still score as many goals as he does now, because he's just such an adaptable and such a technically gifted player. So it'll be interesting to see what the approach is for Derry now in the transfer market.
Yeah, well, I think they've got their centre forward in McGonigal. A goal every couple of games, he's averaged over his career. So, you know, any team would want a striker like that. So they have a fantastic striker there. They just need a few more people to give them the service. And I think the way they're shaping up with the players that they're signing and the rumours about who may be coming in, they're definitely going to be a force to be reckoned with next season.
Yeah, and look, that was a huge 3 points for Derry, but Bohs had to respond, and they certainly did against their arch rivals, Bohemians. A 3-1 win over the champions. Lee Grace with an own goal to open the scoring for Bohemians. Danny Mandreou got one against his former club, but then goals from Omid Sher and from Cornwall. All the goals coming in the first half here gives Bohs a huge 3 points, and that leaves them in that fourth spot going into the final day of the season, and they're 8 goals clear of Derry City.
Yeah, how far are they points-wise? Sorry.
It's level on points.
They've just got a big goal difference.
Big goal
they?
Difference advantage, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you'd expect them to get that. Although they have tricky away matches, which I know we're coming on to in a bit with Derry and Bohs. So it's going to be very interesting. But Sligo, for me, they've really run out of puff as the season's gone on. They've been disappointed. They'd be lucky to hang on to third, and it was a bit of a recovery, but this was a big match for them, and they've not produced in this one.
I think you're mixing up your Shamrock Rovers and your Sligo Rovers here.
Sorry, Kieran. Yeah,
but on Sligo, yeah, I agree. We're not probably overly surprised. I know. I think I had predicted a draw in this one, but in the Derry Sligo game, but I think yourself and Gary had Derry down for the win just on the basis that they needed the points and Sligo didn't. So probably not an overly surprising result in the end, but the manner in which Derry won the game was really impressive, because watching the game back today, and I think there was 3 or 4 cleared off the line, so it could have been an even bigger winning margin in the end. But just on Bohs and Rovers, John, what was your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I thought it was a pretty deserved win for Bohs, and I had gone for Bohs beforehand, and I thought they played pretty well. It just looked like Rovers weren't at the best, were they? And it looked like we've a bit of after the Lawmare show. We've won the league, and you know, although it was a Dublin derby, they could go each way. But Rovers weren't really on the game on the night, and you think Bohs just about well deserved it.
Yeah, and of course this was a Dublin derby played without away fans. I suppose we've covered that topic already in recent shows. But even at the opening goal, it probably just set the tone for Rovers on the night. It was a free kick floated into the Rovers area, but I thought it was just that. It was a bit of a floaty free kick. There was no really great pace about or anything, but Lee Grace gets his head on it, but it goes backwards and then it just hits off I'm not sure who got the initial header, but there was a Rovers player that just comes off the back of their head and then it hits Lee Grace. He doesn't know a whole lot about it and it just ends up in the net. And you just probably thinking from a Rovers point of view then, oh, is it going to be one of them nights? And that's exactly what happened in the end. And the goal then, I'm a share. If you're wondering why maybe Poles doesn't play too often, the Shamrock Rovers deputy goalkeeper, then I think we've seen why, because it was a really, really poor bit of decision-making. He flies off the line and Omishere goes round him. And now, look, he still has a lot to do from a very tight angle, but it's a brilliant finish. And he's done very, very well in recent weeks, the young man.
Yeah, you're not going to say he's showing promise. You don't. I was waiting for that. No, he has done, hasn't he? And he looks like he could be a decent player for Bowes. Hopefully they keep hold of him, because I think there's a few Bowes players that are getting under the spotlight at the moment.
Yeah, well, I was reading that piece by Daniel McDonald yesterday. We were just discussing Georgie Kelly. It's a possibility he could go to the UK. I think Portsmouth might be one of the clubs keeping tabs on him at the moment. But obviously, there's the talk of the move to Derry City as well. Keith Buckley, who's been, you know, a stalwart in midfield for them down the years, he could be relocating to Australia by all accounts. So he'd be a huge loss in the middle.
That would be a huge loss. He's been a fantastic player for Bowes, hasn't he, Buckley? And he just goes about his business and... Yeah, any team in that league would want Buckley in the side.
And not only what he brings to the pitch, John, I'm sure what he brings to that change room and the kind of identity he has with the whole culture of Bohemians Football Club as well. He'd be a massive loss on and off the pitch.
He would, yeah. Huge loss, yeah. He's a great player. I think he's been fantastic for the league and for Bowes.
And another great player that we know very well and has probably had to settle for rotation at times this year because they're so gifted in the fullback areas, Bohemians. But Anto Breslin, it looks like he could be on his way to another Dublin club in St. Patrick's Athletic.
Yeah, well, he's a, you know, obviously he's fallen down the pecking order, hasn't he, this season? And we know the quality he has, so there's no surprise he's been linked with a move away.
Yeah, he's just been unlucky. I suppose Tyreek Wilson has been superb for them as well.
But
you could flip a coin between the two lads on their day. I mean, there's very, very little between them. So I think that would be a brilliant signing for Pats if they can get a hold of Anto.
Yeah, he's very welcome to come back to Longford, but I think he'll want to stay in the top division somehow.
Yeah, but they're just three of the players linked away with moves at the moment. So unfortunately, Keith Long, even if they win the FAI Cup, might have another rebuilding job on his hands. And look, we didn't even discuss the reported dust-up between the two managers here, Keith Long and Stephen Bradley. Can you ever remember a time, John, where this Dublin derby's been more toxic between what's going on in the boardrooms between the two clubs? There doesn't seem to be a great or any relationship there at the moment. We've had incidents with the fans and now we've got the two managers who don't seem to have any love lost between them either.
Yeah, I can only remember Wardy with the corner flag. That was that's probably one of the big incidents, but no, it really has gone bad between the two sides, and I think it all started with this away allocation business, didn't it? Banning away fans, and look, it'll be great next season when a stop's put to that, and we're back to both.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if these two do put a stop to it, and if just a new season, new beginning.
Surely,
yeah.
You know, it just seems petty at this stage, doesn't it? A bit of tit for tat as well. So, the sooner we go back to getting away fans back in these matches, the better.
Yeah, I think even you look at the Old Firm in Scotland, they've had that situation the last while, haven't they? Where they've had to restrict and even ban the away fans, and it's taken away from the spectacle. So we don't want to see the Dublin Derby going down that route, because it is one of the blue ribbon events of Irish football.
It is, and you know, it's not just, it would be well known even in the UK, people come over to watch it and the likes, you know, because, you know, it would be on people's to-do list, a lot of matches like that, and you definitely want to see both sets of fans in. It just makes a better spectacle.
Yeah, let's move on and discuss the games coming up this weekend. It's the final round of games in the Premier Division for 2021. Thankfully, from a Longford Town point of view, John, because I was just totting it up there at work. It was a little bit quiet yesterday, so I decided to tot up how many miles I've done this year. And 10,000 kilometres following Longford Town this year.
That's a hell of a lot of kilometres, isn't it, compared with points gained. How many kilometres per point is that? That is that's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when you factor in the price of diesel at the moment too.
Yeah, shocking. Fair play. I mean, it's been great, the coverage that the likes of yourself and Gary and James have put out this season, and I'm sure we all appreciate being able to watch it and you doing the hard miles so we don't have to.
Yeah, because I was discussing this with one of the town backroom staff a couple of months ago. They asked me where I was traveling from, and I told them, and I said that I'd used up most of my annual leave this year for the town games. And they were like, oh, you'll be delighted when the off season comes around. And even though we were rooted to the bottom of the table at that point, I said, no, I'll miss it. And I probably still will miss it, but I think I really just do need a break now at this stage. I'm starting to feel the mileage the last few weeks.
We need a BTS away trip. That's what we need to get to refresh you, Kieran.
So all of our listeners, fund the BTS trip. Get in there, buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI, and send me and John somewhere nice.
Yeah, or some Aer Lingus or Ryanair vouchers or something like that, so we can go and watch a match elsewhere. So yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? So which match are you going to start on anyway? Where are we previewing first?
We will start with Waterford against St. Pat's. Gary will send us through his predictions later on in the week if he hasn't, signed for some other podcast in the meantime.
Well, but they'll be rubbish anyway. I won't worry about his predictions.
Just to update our listeners on the league standings. So as we said last week, John, you're Mr. Champion-elect. You're on 184 points. And myself and Gary, after last week, we're still neck and neck, 142 points each. Again, for anyone that's tuning in for the first time in a few weeks, so the winner of the league, John, is going to get a case of beer of his choice bought for him by myself and Gary. But the player that finishes bottom of the predictions league is going to have to do a show in an Athlone Town jersey, either in the off season, if we do some off season shows, or next season, the opening show of the season. So there's big stuff on the line here. So as I said, Gary will send in his predictions, but John, I'll go to you first for Waterford against Pats. We've discussed this game in terms of Waterford. It's really all eyes on them, a win here, and they very well could avoid that ninth spot. But even if they do, if Harps do their business, it won't be enough, but they have to do their own business first. Do you think they can get a win against St. Pat's?
I do. I do think they're going to get a win, because I think, obviously, we've talked about Pats in detail in recent weeks, and all eyes will be on that cup final for Pats. And I think Waterford will do the business here. I expect them to beat Pats. Now it won't be a walloping, but it'll be close. But I've just got a further feeling Pats will be taking it a bit easier than normal. And what's coming up, and although there'll be fringe players pushing to try and get in the starting lineup for the final, I think this will be a win for Waterford. I'm going to go 2-1.
2-1-2, Waterford goes John Breyer. I wouldn't agree. Look, since I've seen Waterford there on Saturday night, I thought it was a really poor performance from them. I was surprised how direct they were. As I said there during the review of the game, their biggest threat for most of the game came from their two centre-halves, Nolan and Halford, and long balls up towards them. I thought Junior was very impressive. He had a bit of spark about him, but
Phoenix was good as well on that left hand side. Phoenix Patterson.
Yeah, he was. He probably not as effective, maybe not as effective as he could have been, but he looks a great player. I think I've seen a few Waterford fans in one of their Facebook groups pick up on one of my comments on commentary. I think he said he could take a football down in a telephone box and still get a pass away, even if he was marked. That's how good his first touch is. But those two have a bit of a spark about them, so wouldn't be surprised if they turn up here on the big stage. But overall, as a team performance, I just thought that it was very, very underwhelming. They've got that suspension now for Halford as well. There's a couple of other concerns with them too. So I don't see them having enough to beat Pats. I think Pats will continue to do what they've done over the last couple of weeks. They'll rotate, they'll keep the bodies fresh going into the cup final. But as you said, players will want to try and grab that last chance cup final spot. So I think the players that Pat send out will have plenty to play for, and I think they'll get a point. So I'm going for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw, fair enough. Okay.
Right,
let's to the other match then.
Yeah,
we'll one Harps against Longford,
We will move to Ballybuffet, Harps against Town. So as we said, Waterford, no matter what happens, if Harps just match the Waterford result, then Harps will avoid that relegation playoff and they take on the bottom side, Longford Town. But the last time Longford went up to Ballybuffet, they managed to get a draw that night. I know there was a controversial offside decision and Harps missed a penalty as well. So they'll feel they have enough to win this, but will they actually be able to go and put in a big performance in front of what should be a big home crowd as well, I'd imagine?
I'd have thought it would be. I'd have thought it's going to be bouncing is the ground. And I don't know whether Longford will be up to anything going up there. I'm struggling to see anything other than a home win here. And that's going to put Waterford in trouble. But I'm going to go for a Harps win 2-0 here, Kieran.
2-0, yeah. Look, I think the way the final day will play out, I think Waterford and Harps will draw. And obviously Harps will stay up on their goal difference. They've found the games against Longford difficult this year. They've all been fairly tight occasions. I remember the first one of the first games I commentated on this year was when Watch LOI was still on the go. I did Harps against Longford with Siobhan Madigan, and it was an absolutely atrocious game of football. I don't think there was even a highlights package produced after it, because so little happened on the night. And I mentioned Longford went up to Ballybuffet, got a draw earlier on in the season. How did the other one fare, John? Do you remember the third meeting between them? Or
I can't remember, Kieran. I'm not the man for stats at my age with my memory.
Yeah, let's just pop Mr. Google out here and see how Longford and Harps got on this year. Any other fun with you, John, while I go and Google this?
No, I was just thinking we should have a little bit of background music. Listeners, go and do as you wish. Maybe check a few websites. Maybe the Between the Stripes website instead of Google, you know, if they had all the information.
We need to get some hold music, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Please hold while our useless presenters go and research. Here we are, head-to-head. Harps had a 3-0 win back in August. That one evaded my memory because Longford were so bad that night. Oh, yeah, Sean Boyd.
I do remember
Ryan
that,
Rainey with the cracking goal. Yeah, I remember that. I was actually looking back at a clip of that today. So they had an easy night the last time they played Longford, but the other two games were quite cagey. And you just wonder if the occasion here, how will Harps deal with it? There'll be a lot of pressure on their shoulders.
Yeah, they'll either be full of nerves or they'll just come out and enjoy the evening and a huge crowd and put Longford to the sword.
Yeah, I suppose if they get an early goal with that crowd behind them, you'd wonder if Longford just might wilt a little bit.
We've seen that in a few games this season where Longford have conceded early enough and the heads have gone down and, you know, they've gone on to lose by a couple. So, look, I just can't see Town getting anything up there, you know, the way they've played. And I've seen no change since Derrida Doyle's left, neither.
No.
There's just it's very difficult to get excited about him, isn't it? 2-0, Kieran. Come on, B.
Despite the hammering last time, I'm going to do a Gary. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. If you remember rightly, that game that Harps won 3-0, that was Longford's last chance. Even if they won it, they would have still been relegated. But there was still a glimmer of hope if they had won that game. And I think the pressure that night got to them. You remember they took the hammering off Waterford and then the hammering off Harps, and everyone knew the season was done then. But they're going up to Harps here, and you know, their only, I suppose, motivational tool is that they can be party poopers and put a bit of misery on Harps. But there's no real pressure on Longford going up here. So I think they might be able to frustrate Harps, sit in and get a result. I'll go for a 1-1 draw.
Okie doke. Fair enough.
We'll move on. Sligo against Bohs. Again, Sligo, nothing to play for here. But Bohemians, they are in pole position to grab that fourth spot. And then they'll have to hope they win the cup, obviously. If they don't win the cup, if they finish fourth and Pats win the cup, then Bohs will be in Europe. But they'll want to finish fourth and win the cup, of course. But I suppose with that cup final as a bit of a safety net, what type of team will they feel here, Bohs? Will they go full strength or will they be rotated?
They've got to go full strength, haven't they?
Well, have they? Because I mean, it makes no difference if they win the cup, they're in Europe. If they finish fourth and lose the cup final, they're in Europe. So can they afford to rest players here? They can.
Yeah, but they could finish fifth, couldn't they? If they lose.
They could.
Yes. So they can't afford to rest players at all. No, they can't. It's a big match, this one, for them. And I think they've got to go to Sligo and get something here. And they'll have to put a full strength team, because they can't guarantee, you know, qualifying for Europe based on beating Pats in the final of the FAI Cup. So they'll have to go strong. Obviously, we've talked about a lot of transfer speculation, whether that's going to be on players' minds. But you'd expect them to go to Sligo and do a fully professional job to try and get fourth place. I've just got a funny feeling they've been a bit inconsistent this season for me of Bohs.
They've been more consistent than Sligo, even though Sligo's well above them in the table. Yeah. But
I know. I've got a funny feeling pressure might get to them here.
I don't see it.
I think Sligo are going to win this 2-1.
Ah, John, you've lost it. You've lost the plot.
Think so?
Yeah,
I think so.
Bohs. Sligo are very, very poor against Derry. Derry, as I said, could have put 5 or 6 past them. I fancy Bohs 2-0 here.
Okie doke.
Going to be a huge travelling support as well, by the looks of things.
Yeah. But we'll see.
Now, you heard me and James Rogers discuss this one earlier. There should be a little bit of bite here. I think it's fair to say there's no love lost between the two managers. Dundalk against Derry, and we know what's on the line here for Derry City. Dundalk can't qualify for Europe by way of their poor goal difference, but they would love to stop Derry getting into Europe and stop the departing Michael Duffy and Patrick McElhenney having Europe to look forward to next season.
Oh, they surely would, won't they? There's definitely a bit of something in this one, a bit of spice, and obviously the new owners, and I'd expect to... a packed house at this one, so yeah,
atmosphere will be rocking.
Yeah, you see, I think Dundalk are going to win this, Kieran. I just think there's too many things going in their favour for this one, and I'm going to go 2-1 to Dundalk.
You heard me ask James Rogers the question. Michael Duffy obviously is available to play in this game. Do you think Vinnie Perth will field him, given what's on the line in terms of going to Derry next year?
That's a tricky one.
I think he will. I think there's no question about Duffy's professionalism. I'd say he plays.
I'm not sure he will, to be honest.
If you were the manager, what call would you make?
I don't think I'd pick him.
Right.
Okay. Because just purely, you know, players are going. You say players are going to be, but there's a lot on the line for Derry for next season, isn't it? Duffy, you know, Duffy, McElhenney, they're going to Derry next season. They'll want European football. I don't know. I think I'm not sure he'll play him. I don't think he will.
Can they do without him, though, even if he's only 50% at it? Can they do it? He's been so good this season.
I know. I just think it's too big a clash. I can't see him playing him. I just can't.
Mm. Getting it tough to call this one. I think I'm going to follow you. I think the home crowd here is going to be a big factor. I think we've seen Dundalk since the fans went back in, they've been pretty much foot perfect in Oriel Park. I know they haven't really carried that onto the road, and that's what's cost them Europe in the end. But at home, they're a different prospect. And Derry have been very inconsistent late. I know it was a great performance against Sligo last time, but that was in front of their home fans, and it was a great atmosphere. But it's going to be the opposite for them here, and I think that might be the difference. I think I'll follow you, and I think I'll go 2-1.
Yeah, good.
And the final game of the season, it's live on TV. We're going to see Shamrock Rovers lift the title against Drogheda. Neither team have anything to play for. I think before we discuss this one, we have to mention Tim Clancy and the job at Drogheda. Incredible performance, incredible season. If they win this one, they'll still finish behind Dundalk. They would have loved to have finished behind or ahead of their loud rivals. But aside from that, what a brilliant season for Drogheda United.
Oh, it's been super. So, yeah, I think... it's a shame that the season dipped a little bit, but you can't take away the credit that they have, and he's done a great job there, Clancy, keeping them up.
Yeah, I suppose the goal now is to try and keep the core of that squad together, because I'm sure the likes of Chrissy Lyons, I know he had a couple of injuries this season, but I think his talent is there for all to see. There's other really good young players. We've mentioned Phillips in midfield. I'm sure clubs from across the water will be looking at his development. We've mentioned the goalkeeper. We've mentioned the fullbacks. And then obviously the experienced players that have come in, the likes of Massey and Deegan in the middle. If they can keep all those players and add to them, then why can't they have a tilt at the top four next year?
No, there's nothing to say they can't. Just a couple of... they don't need to change too much, do they? They just need to maybe just get a couple in, and you never know.
How realistic is it that they're able to keep all those players, though?
Well, I think you're right. I think there'll be teams having a look at them.
I'd be shocked if Jimmy Brown is there next year. I mean, he is an incredible fullback.
That was one I thought of straight away, James Brown. I don't know whether he'll be, you know, there's going to be a few teams in for him, I would have thought. At the front two have impressed, haven't they? Lyons and Lynch. So we'll see what happens there. So Lyons and Doyle. Yeah. Because I think Doyle's got like a dozen goals this season. Yeah. They've been very, very important to the team. So we'll just have to see who they can keep hold of, and what kind of season they'll have to look forward to next year.
And even you'd wonder about their manager too, wouldn't you? Because we heard from James there, he has a feeling maybe Vinnie Perth won't be at Dundalk next year. Someone like Clancy, you'd surely imagine he'd be up on a few shortlists.
Geez, he'd be popular, wouldn't he, if he went from Drogheda to Dundalk? but yeah, you're right. He's impressed so far, hasn't he, with what he's done. So... It's a possibility.
Right, this game itself, Shamrock Rovers against Drogheda. Rovers looking to bounce back from that defeat against Bowes, and Drogheda just looking to round off what has been an absolutely brilliant season. How do we see this one playing out?
Right, well, we'll talk not too much more about it, but I'm going to go for a for a home win. I'm going to go 2-1 on this one.
2-1. Yeah, why not? I'll follow you on that because obviously going to be a big crowd turning out to see them lift the trophy. So
yeah,
wouldn't be surprised if they get another late one. That's been the theme of their season, so they might as well end the season with a late one.
Yeah, 94th minute winner.
Of course, we discussed on last week's show the playoff, first division playoff final. That's coming up on Friday night as well, Bray, against UCD. Just give me your prediction for that one again, John, from last week. I think you had gone for a UCD win, hadn't you? Was it 3-0? I think you went 3-0 last week. Do you still feel like... Are we going to lock that in?
Yeah, lock it in, yeah.
Lock it in. Anyone that listened to last week's show will know that Gary was very emphatic about his prediction. He went 5-0 to UCD. That's how disgusted he was with Bray's performance against Galway in the first leg. He wasn't impressed with what he saw, and we all know he's a big UCD fan. So I've gone for 3-2 to UCD. So look, if any of them outcomes come true, then the people that are turning out or watching it on the stream, they'll be treated to plenty of goals anyway.
Yeah, that's always one of those anyway.
Right, before we go any further, we're going to hear from Aaron Clark now, the host of the Women's National League show on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. He's going to look back on what was the most dramatic of ends to the WNL season. And of course, we'll look ahead to this weekend's FEI Women's Cup final at the Tallaght Stadium between Shelburne, who are chasing the double, and Wexford FC. Now, it was a dramatic weekend, to say the least, a concluding weekend in the Women's National League recently. We've got the Women's Cup final coming up this weekend at the Tallaght Stadium as well. So no better man to tell us about all things Women's National League and Irish women's football in general than Aaron Clark from the WNL show, the Women's National League podcast. Aaron, great to have you on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you can. When you say exciting weekend, wow, it was magic. I was lucky to pick the right venue, not necessarily by pure choice, but just by out of the fact of commitments that I'd made, which I weren't to help them with the commentary stuff. Seeing me go to Talca Park rather than P Mountain got rewarded in the end, but what a night, you know, great for the Women's National League Saturday night was, especially with two sides going right down to the wire. Paymount United, you have to feel an awful lot for them, especially considering what had gone on. You know, they had an opportunity to win the game to win the league the week before and weren't successful in the nil-all draw with DLR Waves. Then they go 2-0 up, and you probably don't know if you've seen it. The Galway journalist for RT, Jonathan Higgins, popped the champagne open at 2-0 for Paymount. And then I think a couple of Galway players took exception to that later on. And then, you know, Shelburne at that stage, nil-all, Ward filled is true in Talca Park that came out, they're 2-0 up. You know, you can sort of sense the airiness has gone out of the place. Bit of a lull in the game. And then Shelburne scored twice quickly through Jesse Stapleton and then with Noel Murray. And then Ward starts to fill the true 2-1 Paymount. They're winning then 2-2 half-time. You're sort of thinking, okay, this could be interesting. This could throw a couple of spanners in the works. You know, and then when Shells go 3-0 up at the start of the second half, and then you sort of know that P Mount have conceded, because there was a massive roar in Talca Park with the game being live on TG Car. Everybody was watching it as well, so people were aware, and you could hear the massive scream every time Galway scored. But the thing about it is, it's not as if Galway just scored some lucky goals. Some of the goals are absolutely unbelievable. You look at Abby Callanan's, the fifth goal, where she dinks the ball over Neve Burke's head. You know, an absolute majestic finish, and probably one that the Women's National League will savour in terms of the title race for a long time. We had a playoff in 2015-16 season when Shelburne and Wexford Utes couldn't be separated. And, you know, that was the last time. And we thought maybe we might have had one on Tuesday night, but Shelburne had other ideas. And Galway in particular, a lot of credit also has to go to Galway and Stephen Lally, because he decided to play his full-strength team. Summers on the 19s, who had a cup final the next day against DLR Waves. He played them in that game. He didn't decide that he would rest on his laurels and just say, listen, the season's over. He looked at it as an opportunity to gauge where they were against P-Mount, considering when he just took over Galway, they'd been well beaten by P-Mount. And it was an opportunity to see where they were. And, you know, the two best results this year for Galway have come on the road, beat Wexford away on the road and beat P-Mount away on the road. If they hadn't beaten Wexford would have been in the mix for the title. That one game's the difference. So Galway have had a massive impact on the Women's National League title. And, you know, a lot of factors sort of went into it. You can look at the Wexford side and say, where are they going to play a week inside, knowing that they couldn't win the league with the cup final this weekend? Stephen Quinn said no. He went with full strength bar. I don't know if you've seen this. Adele Kennedy played in goal. Adele Kennedy plays centre midfield. So the normal goalkeeper was injured, and they didn't want to risk her ahead of the cup final just to make sure that she'd be okay for this weekend. And the under-19s keeper, who was also registered, Maeve Williams, was injured as well. So they came with an outfielder in goal, and by fair to Adele, she made some absolute superb saves in the second half. She did give away a penalty in the first half, but she really kept her side in it. And especially, you look what happened later on when Wexford scored twice to put the pressure on Shelbourne. It's sort of one of them that, you know, maybe a couple of her saves were the difference, but if she was in midfield, could it have been a different result on the night? It was amazing to be part of, you know, with the cup final this weekend, just to see that sort of finish. And I don't think we'll ever get something like that again.
Yeah, and look, it's a bit of a perfect storm, isn't it? A fantastic, engaging end to the season. And TG Cahir, you mentioned it there, they've taken up a bit of coverage over the last couple of weeks. They showed the title run in. So I suppose the league has done itself a massive favour now in terms of a longer-term deal down the line, do you think?
You'd hope so. You know, TG Cahir are an absolute brilliant broadcaster for a minority Irish sports. We've seen that over the years, the sports that they covered even at the weekend, what they've got this weekend. So it's definitely added an awful lot. And the biggest thing about them is they didn't just rock in and say, listen, we're going to put a camera here and we're going to just go there. When I was out in Pino the week before, they had 6 or 7 cameras in there. They had the two cameras in Tolka Park on Saturday evening, as well as having the live game out in Pino. And they showed the goals from both games on the television, you know, just to show the fans, this is what's happening, this is what's going on. They showed the presentation live from Tolka Park as well. You know, they really put in a massive effort. They've done productions. And to be honest with you, both myself and yourself have been involved in LOI TV across different platforms, with yourself in the Premier Division and myself the Women's National League. It's been a massive addition to the leagues. But if we can get a broadcast like TG Cahir to come on board and do regular games, it can only help grow it even more. Like, we've seen the calls during the season from the likes of James O'Callaghan, even Karen Duggan, Anya O'Gorman, about the league potentially needing to go semi-professional. You look at the Shelbourne girls and Eleanor Randolph and Piemont, Emily Whelan and Jamie Finn, they all went to Birmingham, the three of them did, on free transfers because they're on amateur forms. So clubs have developed these players over the years. They get no reward from it as well. They can't even claim training compensation because they're down as amateurs as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of things like that, and that sort of things need to be addressed as well. But I think overall, this year's probably been a massive rising in terms of off the field for standards, in terms of production, games being shown, media coverage. You know, the FAI have done some brilliant, brilliant work. You look at the book that they created at the start of the year, the 10 years on, to celebrate the 10 years of the Women's National League. So there's been so many positives. And to be honest with you, TG Cahir coming in at the end sort of added a little tap to that book, and, you know, it made a great way to finish the year. Like, they showed four games live on television, which is more than we could ever imagine, even at the start of the season. So I'd be hopeful that they'd come back on board next year and show some more games, because, you know, we need that sort of thing, and we need, you know, regular exposure and stuff like that. It's great that this weekend the cup final is on RTE, but like, you have the same complaint with the League of Ireland. You know, RTE don't show enough games in the League of Ireland, in my opinion, either. So it's hard to see them maybe coming in and looking at the women's league. You know, so you're looking at a broadcaster like TG Cahir, especially after seeing Air Sport go under. So, you know, we can only hope and pray that they do come through with another run, because I've thoroughly enjoyed the coverage of TG Cahir. They've been brilliant in everything they've done for the league. So long may they continue with a bit of luck.
Yeah, and I think it comes at a time as well where it's probably fair to say that women's sport is getting much more exposure now on mainstream kind of broadcast platforms, particularly if you look at the Women's Super League in England. I mean, you get all the transfer news now on Sky Sports News, you get all the stories, they show interviews with the managers, and then obviously they show the games and they package them really well and promote them well during the week and the build-up to games. So you can actually follow the Women's Super League without almost watching the games now, which is fantastic. So I suppose the Women's National League here in Ireland can take hope from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Like, I'm very good friends with the Reading goalkeeper, Grace Maloney. And, you know, I speak regularly to her about things in the WSL. And you see everything. If you want something, you can go and find it, whether it be even on social media, all the clips, all the stuff. It's all everywhere to be found. You know, there's a massive interest like that. Yes, we're a long way behind that, but there's no reason why over time we can't grow and we can't continue to, you know, close the gaps and things like that. Standard-wise, we're probably a long, long time off. It'll take an awful lot to get us up there. But there's a lot of great things happening, like Sky coming in on board for the women's national team, Cadbury's coming on board, you know, having their own sponsors, things that maybe you could have only dreamed of. It was only a couple of years ago we were talking about the protests out in Liberty Hall where they're talking about sharing tracksuits and changing in airports and stuff like that. Now we're looking at going on charter flights to certain countries to go for international games. Like you look at, I was in Helsinki for the recent 2-1 win, and it was the largest traveling media for an Irish women's international. You know, it's grown and grown and grown. You've got the people like John Fallon who've been there all along, who've been the foot soldiers for many years. And then you see a lot of people like the likes of your David Kelly's, Gavin Comiskey's, Tony O'Donoghue was another one who's been there for a long time. They're all starting to come now. More and more people are starting to send them to that as well. So it's positive and it's great. You know, you're right. What you're saying, women's sport, like we look at the stuff that's being done, the ladies football in particular, you know, it shows what it's capable of. And it's just a matter of continuing to back it, continuing to put it in. And we need to see as much off the field improvements as we do on the field. I think on the field, if the improvements don't continue to happen, that'll be a bit of a problem. Like you look at Galway in particular, like they're creating massive structures underage with the under-19s and 17s being regularly successful, which will add an awful lot to the Women's National League, where you're based up and around, in and around the Dundalk area. There's Dundalk talking about bringing an under-19s team into the Women's National League. We know we need that sort of thing. We need more and more to be brought in. We need stronger ties to the League of Ireland, because without that you can flourish as much as you want, but you're limited unless you've got the massive exposure of having a strong league. You'll never get to the heights of where you want to get to. And I think that's the most important thing, is that the league continues to grow on the field as much as it has grown off the field in the last couple of years.
How do you see that connection between the WNL and the League of Ireland clubs coming along? Do you think that's improving? Because you mentioned there, it was great to see the title decider been played in Tolka Park, but I know from listening to some other podcasts and the rest recently, they were saying as great as the final day was in Piemont, you were still looking at them playing in kind of a bit of a field situation where they didn't have that stadium around them. It didn't have the setting that a fixture and an occasion like that deserves. So obviously, I think like League of Ireland, we're always talking about the need to improve facilities, and you'd like to maybe see League of Ireland clubs linking up more with the Women's National League clubs, and then everyone will benefit from improved facilities down the line.
Absolutely, absolutely, 100%. I think it's something that's probably going to come in time. Like if you look at the Women's National League at the moment, there's not many clubs that aren't associated with the League of Ireland club. I think Piemont is actually the only one at this stage. Every other one that has some sort of connections. While Wexford Utes and Wexford FC are slightly different, they share a lot of great common ground and stuff like that. Just the name is different. Cork City have developed into fully amalgamate to take under the men's banner. Shelburne have done the same, playing regularly. But you also look at them, the likes of Bowes playing majority of their games in the Oscar trainer. Like there has been talk in recent times that they're going to potentially bring in a rule that you have to have a certain amount of seats in a ground. So that could sort of force clubs to have to rethink whether it be put in stands or stuff like that, you know, to try and grow up. But I totally get where you're coming from with the Piemont structure. Piemont have been a great club for the Women's National League, but in terms of where they are, it's tough. You can't really develop into it because they're not going to get realistic. They're never going to get a men's League of Ireland team. So it could be a case over time that maybe they have to amalgamate with one of the Oakland National Women League of Ireland teams. Like you look at Shamrock Rovers are only up the road from them. I know there has been talk that Rovers are trying to get into the Women's National League and they've been looking at making that merger. So maybe that's something that does make sense, that, you know, we see that sort of thing, that Mark Scanlon maybe comes down the line as League of Ireland director and says you have to be fully amalgamated. Like we've seen with the underage structures of the boys, where, you know, the Dublin District Skill Boy Leagues, they were told they can't come in by themselves. They had to amalgamate in with clubs. Maybe that's something that we see, you know, Kevin's and Bowes, the partnership has worked quite well. So there's definitely potential to have them sort of things down the line. But I 100% agree with you in terms of that. And then, like, even watching Shells versus Bowes last week in the Oscar trainer before going to Piemont against the LR Wales, both of them are played in pitches. Don't get me wrong, some of the pitches are quite good. The actual stadium and facilities are just poor. And if you want to grow the league, is that really the way forward by having them playing in that sort of facility? Probably not. I definitely agree that that's something that, while the spectacle on the pitch between DLR and Piemont as well as Galway and Piemont was good, off the field, if you're looking at, you know, just a black background of just fields, it's not really appealing to a broadcaster, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, very interesting stuff there. You mentioned you were in Finland recently for that great win for the national team, and that keeps them in the mix for the qualification as well for the World Cup, which is fantastic. And I think just like the men's team, there seems to be a real buzz around the women's team, and again, the live coverage on television has really helped that. But I suppose something that always helps any sport to grow as well is a little bit of controversy, and we had that last night with the 21s coverage. I've just stuck it into Google here, and there's several articles up about Noel King's maybe jibe towards Anya O'Gorman last night on the coverage. What did you make of that?
To be honest with you, I probably didn't want to comment on it last night, but I sort of felt I had to comment on it. And if I'm being totally honest, it didn't sit well with me. You know, it was quite a poor comment from Noel. Probably tongue in cheek, but it didn't sit well. You know, it could have been, especially for the setting that it was in, you know, being live on television as well. I thought it was quite poor. As someone tweeted that, you know, Shells have just done something absolutely brilliant. So you wish we were talking about the good for Shells, not talking about something bad that's happened at the weekend. You know, during the week, instead we're talking about Noel King rather than talking about Shelburne potentially going for the double.
And look, you mentioned it there, they're going for the double this weekend, so I'm sure it'll be quickly forgotten about if they can complete that double. How do you see the cup final playing out? And I want to ask you as well, I think, is this the first year it's been played in Tala? Obviously, we're quite used to seeing it in the Aviva as the curtain raiser, I suppose, before the FAI Cup final. But as we know, that brought problems down the years. Obviously, the early kickoff wasn't overly attractive for people heading over to the Aviva. And we've seen the absolutely crazy scenario one year where the men started to warm up during the penalty shootout. So that wasn't that certainly wasn't ideal at all. But I suppose the thinking behind moving it to Tala, you can market it directly on its own and hopefully a big crowd. And when it's on the telly, it looks a lot better if it's in a packed out Tala as opposed to maybe in Aviva with no more than a handful of thousand in there. So I'll just get your thoughts on all of that.
So it was played in Tala last year, but obviously it was played behind closed doors when Yeah. Came out beat Cork. So there was no fans there. It was just the two sides. So it didn't really make much of a difference last year with COVID situation. But this is the first year with the fans. Looks as though they're going to have Shelburne on one side and Wexford on another side. So it'll be interesting to gauge what sort of crowd they do get. I think the clubs have done a bit of marketing behind it. Some have done more than others. The FAI have done a bit. You know, they had the media day on Monday where they both captains plus the two players from either side out just to come and chat to you. So, you know, got a lot out of that. And there'll be a lot of promotion in the week. And I think, to be honest with you, I wasn't in favour of Tala. I wasn't. I do agree with not having it before the Men's Cup final because it's a long day, especially if you want to go and watch both games. It's a long, long day. You know, you've a long gap in between, especially after what happened a couple of years ago. But just before I do give you predictions and stuff like that in the Cup final, interesting just to note on that, what happened a couple of years ago when the players warmed up, that was actually pre-planned that, funny enough, I don't know why it was agreed upon by even the women's clubs agreed to it, but it was actually pre-planned, which is the most frustrating part that, you know, the clubs should have said no as well. You know, there should have been a precedent put in place, and that's probably why we've seen in years after the Women's Cup final being pushed back a little bit. The Women's Cup final, actually, if it goes to extra time, it's only 10 minutes aside, whereas the League Cup usually was 15 minutes aside. So that was a strange one that was brought in as well for the Aviva. But in terms of the Cup final itself, it'll be a different game to last week. I'm 100% certain of that because Wexford will have Keith Gray back in goal. Lauren Dwyer should be available as well. And then that puts Adele Kennedy back into midfield. And I think it'll be a close, close game. Shelburne got off to a great start last week and Wexford were piling on the pressure later on where you see Noel King sending his players into the corner quite early. So it won't be a lot between them. They played a couple of times in the Cup final. There's only been one Cup final that was really a one-sided. That was when Shelburne beat them 5-0 when Wexford were missing a lot of players who were out through ACL injuries at the time. You know, Wexford have some absolute superb players, two youngsters, and Kieran Ross, they're out wide. When you look at Shelburne, you know, Noelle Murray, what more can you say about her? Moments of magic. She can turn a game on a sixpence if she wants. You know, you look at the goal in the semi-final against Galway, she flicked the ball over two people's head for burying a pass Leah Hayes Cohen. Then, you know, Jessie Stapleton, she's only 16, come into that side and looks absolutely a superstar. She's been brilliant the whole way through the season. Probably going to be Shell's player of the year, you know, in contention maybe for young player of the year as well. And then, you know, Shell's have some of the real experience, like the Pearl Slattery. But the problem is that the times the sides have played this year, it's been a 3-2 win to Shelburne, a 1-0 win for Wexford, and a 0-0 draw. They've always been that sort of games. The results have always been close. And for me, I wouldn't be shocked if we get another penalty shootout in the cup final between these two sides. The only thing that I'm delighted about with the game being on Sunday is that it's directly after the rugby. So if you've settled in for your afternoon watching the television and watching the sport on RTE, you know, you're going to get a crossover of crowd who have watched the rugby. You'll get a bit of that spillover coming in to watch the soccer, which is brilliant, you know. So that'll give the opportunity. And realistically, you'd be hoping for a very strong crowd. What is a good number? It's hard to say. But Shelburne, you would imagine, would bring a lot of their youth teams out to this, to the game, and Wexford would have a good travelling core. The last time they played in Tala in the playoff in 2006, I think it was 710 at the game. You know, Cork City recently set a league record of 1,000. Mm. So if we want to get back to days of playing in the Aviva, you need to see, for this sort of cup final, you need to see upwards of probably 2,000, and then build over the next couple of years before they can demand that to be back in the Aviva. They just have to start selling where Tala gets to a demand that it's unsustainable anymore, that they need to go further afield. But until then, you'll probably see it staying in Tala for the next couple of years. But I wouldn't be shocked to see either side win on penalties.
Yeah, look, sounds like it's going to be an exciting cup final. So make sure you can tune into it, listeners, if you are sitting at home on Sunday, or even better, again, get out to the cup final. But Aaron, brilliant to speak with you. Thanks very much for chatting with us about the Women's National League. For our listeners, just let them know where they can find the Women's National League show.
So anywhere on any of our social, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, the WNL show. Lots of content going up this week. Spoke to both camps and interesting interviews with them all coming up over the next couple of days. And yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate the time.
Brilliant stuff. Aaron, thanks very much.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net, or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, John, great to hear from Aaron there. He's done a great job down the years of promoting the women's game, and it's great to see more and more, I suppose, broadcasters and journalists and just Irish media in general getting interested now in women's football and particularly the domestic league here in Ireland. It really is great to see.
Yeah, it was a fantastic finish to the season as well, wasn't it? It went right down to the wire. So, it is good, and a few televised matches. So more of that, please. Yeah, good to see. Mm.
Right before we go, I think on next week's show, obviously, it's going to be the it won't be the final show of the season, I don't think. We'll see how it plays out. But obviously, we'll be looking back at the final round of fixtures, and we'll be looking ahead to the FAI Cup final as well. We'll probably be back to react after the Cup final as well. But on next week's show, I think we're probably going to name our team of the season and our player of the year and all the rest as well. So listeners, do get your votes in, drop us tweets, drop us Facebook messages, whatever it may be, give us your team of the year contenders, your player of the year and all the rest, and we'll read them out on next week's show. But John, I think you have a few names on your shortlist already that you're going to share the creative juices flowing.
Yeah, well, I think I've got five definite ins, and a couple of them might be a question mark. I know you weren't overly excited with Dylan Watts this season, but he deserves to be in there. He's got a lot of assists this season, and he's been pivotal to the Rovers this season. So it's probably one that you won't agree with for a start.
I'll have to sit down now during the week and see, but I don't think he's going to be on my list.
And Mandrew?
Oh, he has to be there, yeah. Has to be there.
Yeah, of course he is, yeah. And he's got to be up there for player of the season, I would have thought. Yeah, he's in there. I think the obvious one up front is Georgie Kelly. That goes without saying, you know, top goal scorer. But then I'm going to pick a couple of wide players that might surprise you a bit. I'm going to go with Matty Smith and John Martin. What do you think of those two options?
Well, I know John Martin's been a scourge for Longford Town this season. Scored a lot of goals against him. Look, he's very, very versatile and a bit of a good poacher about him as well. Yeah, he's a good player. Matty Smith was the other one you said, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Smith has been a strange one because he's played as a bit of a false nine at times this season, hasn't he, for Pats? Mm. And I know he's got plenty of goals, but I'm not sure that that is his best position, to be honest. I think if you're talking wide players this season, I think one of the best, if not the best, out on the left anyway, Liam Burt would be straight on my list.
Okay. Ahead of Duffy?
I'll have to see, but I think Burt has been, he's been one of the players that any time I've gone to watch Bowes or any time I've watched him on the box, he stood out for me straight away. I'd be very, very surprised. We were discussing earlier players that might be leaving Bowes. I'd be surprised if there's clubs back across the water not taking a second look at him.
Yeah, would surprise me. There's going to be a few looking at that Bowes team. You could easily see getting picked apart, couldn't you?
That's the problem, isn't it? We always discuss it, I suppose. How do they build and go on to the next level? It's difficult when they're still part-time.
Yeah, they always seem to pull players out of the bag from somewhere, don't they? But yeah, you just love them to just have a couple of two or three seasons, just keeping hold of the squad and the young talent, because we've seen Tierney go already, haven't we?
Yeah, well, he will be going, yeah, at the end of the year, yeah. Motherwell.
Yeah, so, yeah. So we'll see anyway. But yeah, I just thought, Martin and Smith might be a couple that you might not have had in your team.
Yeah, well, as I said, we'll nail down our team of the year on next week's show, and we'll have a player of the year award and a few other bits and pieces as well. So listeners, do get those players that you want to see featured into it, and any other comments you have to make. So we'll go through that at the end of next week's show. But before we go tonight, John, I suppose we'll reflect on the Republic of Ireland and their week. I was at the Aviv on Thursday, got to see the big man himself, Callum Robinson. It's great to see him in action.
But yeah.
Fantastic performance. I brought herself along. It was her first Ireland game. She really, really enjoyed it as well, which was great to hear, because I suppose if I brought her a few years ago and some of the football that was been played, would she have enjoyed it as much? I'm not so sure. But I was on the edge of my seat throughout. That was my first game now since Kenny has taken over that I've got to go to live, just with the pandemic and work and everything else. That was the first chance I had to go along. And the contrast between what I used to go and watch. I mean, I told this story a few weeks ago on the show that I went out to Georgia to watch us, and we made 70 something passes in 90 minutes of football. We made 456 passes or something the other night against Portugal. I mean, the contrast is unbelievable, but it's not just passes for passing sake. I mean, we're playing our way out with tight little corners, goalkeepers pinging it out to the fullbacks first opportunity he gets. It's just a joy to watch.
Yeah, I think anybody can see what they're trying to do. And
everyone bar Liam Brady, of course.
Everybody bar Liam Brady. And I get some of it. It's Luxembourg, but it wasn't so long ago since Luxembourg were beating us, was it? But I think you've got a lot to look forward to. You have got three or four young lads who are going to be in that team for the next decade. Yeah. And they're absolute quality. They've got the potential to be real standout talents. I'm thinking the likes of Bazunu in goals, who's going to be, at his young age, what he's doing now, you can't see him being anything but world class. A lot could go wrong between now and the next few years, but, for a player like that, he's going to,
That save he made.
So confident at such a young age. That save, from that deflected shot. Brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and you've got young Amma
Bamadeli.
Exactly. And, I like your centre backs. I like John Egan. I look at Shane Duffy. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He's just such a big character there in the centre of defence. And I don't know what happened at Celtic. It obviously didn't go too well there, but he's back to his best. And, I think if Cullen's impressed me in midfield, and the front three have looked good. I'm not so sure about Ida yet, but
I suppose it's difficult for him, the lack of club football he's playing, isn't it?
Yeah, and our ex-Limerick man and Cork man did fantastic, didn't he, his last match?
I really need to go back. I need to go back and find some clips from early podcasts. I mean, we used to rave about that man, Og Benny.
Yeah.
He's been a bit of an afterthought since he left the League of Ireland. We haven't heard a lot about him, and he's playing as a fullback for Rotherham at the moment, but I don't think he'll be there much longer. If clubs are looking at his performance for Ireland, he looks a fantastic talent.
Yeah, he is a talent, and he's definitely one. And I do remember raving about him because I used to love watching him at Limerick. He was fantastic, wasn't he? The pace and the power down that left flank.
If Og Benny turns up today, Limerick will win.
I was pretty much right. So it's the same for Ireland now. So, I think that they probably need with Robinson scoring goals. I don't know. I'm not 100% on Ida. I think he's time. I'd like to see, I don't know if Parrott's going to kick on or not, but I think they've plenty of potential. They've young McGrath. You know, they've loads of options, and it's great.
I mean, the second goal against Luxembourg tonight has to be one of the best goals Ireland's ever scored. Hendrick in the middle of the field turning into Zinedine Zidane with this pass on the outside of the boot, opening up the defence, and then the first time ball across and the tap in. I mean, it was an absolutely sensational goal.
Yeah, really, really good. So look, I think that's the qualifications out of the way. I think I'd like to see Kenny get his new contract. I don't think there'll be any doubt that he will. I think everybody's buying into what he's trying to do, and the fact that he's given such young lads a chance, and it's proven him right. Now, it's obviously taken a while to get right because he's had some very, very bad results at the start of his spell, but I think the promise that he's shown now shows he deserves this new contract, and it'll be interesting to see. It's the Nations League, isn't it, next? See how it
goes. Nations League up next, so we'll see how that goes. I suppose, like everything else, you need a bit of luck too, get a good group and all the rest, but I just think the enthusiasm around the whole Irish team is brilliant. I mean, up at the Aviva there the other night, the atmosphere before, during and after the game, I haven't seen anything like it at the Aviva before. I mean, walking into the ground and people letting off pyro and singing, and just the atmosphere was electric going into the ground. And I was delighted that it was the first game that Keogh got to come along to, because I was like, often it can be a bit of a dull experience going up to the Aviva, and you often hear a pin drop up here, but there just seems to be a fantastic buzz around this Irish team. Have to put that down to Stephen Kenny. And I mean, we're talking about Derek Benny, like the fact we've seen him and we talked about him so much, and now he's in the team, and you see Jamie McGrath as well. You see the 21 players coming through as well. I mean, for a decade there, we had the under 21s where players were getting to that stage and they're in the 21s and they never progressed. I think Robbie Brady was probably the only real notable one in the last decade that came through the 21s. Whereas you see Knight come off the bench the other night. And I know Kenny spoke about this in his post-match interview. He said, well, from having worked with the under-21s, I know the character of Knight. I knew I could bring him on and trust him, and I know the qualities he have. And we've seen him get the couple of assists the other night. So, I mean, the
he was
fact
very
you've
good
got,
when he came on, wasn't he? He was,
I mean, the fact you've got really so good. Many talents coming through the 17s, the 19s, the 21s now, I just think it's great. You can really form an attachment with this Irish team, whereas you didn't really have that before.
Do you know what? I'm going to say something now, and you're not going to like it. It's very similar to how England is with Southgate.
Yeah,
at the moment as well, because there's something very, very likable about the way he's brought.
Although you do enough moaning about him too.
Oh well, I don't. I think he's grand, but you know, it's a similar thing, and it's giving youth a chance and seeing these players blossom from under 19s, under 21s to full international. And,
yeah, and of course, England. I mean, they won the under 20 and under 17 World Cups, didn't they? So they built their recent, I won't call it success, they haven't won a trophy yet, but bit of a resurgence in their fortunes, I suppose, from years gone by. They've built that off what they've done with the underage teams and players coming through and all the rest. So, yeah, I wouldn't disagree that maybe that's the blueprint they're following, but I definitely think Kenny's a better manager than Southgate.
Okay, we'll leave it at that, Kieran.
Yeah, my laptop's about to die, so we will round it up there. Been great having you along again this evening, John. Hopefully we'll have himself back next week, and we'll round off the season in style. We'll be looking back at the final round of fixtures and, of course, looking ahead to the FAI Cup final as well. That should be a big occasion. It looks like tickets are selling quite well for the Cup final, so we will have a chat about that on next week's show. But a massive thanks to James Rogers and to Aaron Clark for joining us this week. Thanks to our listeners. You have been absolutely tremendous all season, particularly over the last few weeks. You've been tuning in your droves. So keep that up between now and the end of the year. Keep subscribing, keep sharing it on social media and all the rest. You know where you can find the podcast at this stage. And as ever, you can check out BetweenTheStripes.net for a few other extra bits and pieces. But again, thanks to John. Thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll speak to you next week. Make sure you get out and enjoy your game this weekend, folks.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.